Well, hello, Holly.
Hello, Dave.
What's going on?
I'm feeling very caffeined and sugared up again.
That's good. We got Primo's today.
Yes, we have Primo's donuts.
We move.
Another of our favorites.
Yes, we're doing the world tour of donuts.
Yeah, so, hey, welcome to What Difference Does It Make?
Yeah, it's very exciting. We were just actually talking about how amazing our intro music is. And that is by Joel Graves, New Monkey Studios, formerly of Everest and Early Mart.
Thank you, Joel.
Yeah.
We love our music.
It's always amazing to hear it. And it's one of my favorite things about our podcast is the music. And we got to get him into the studio.
Yes, we do.
All right. But right now we have someone even better. Not even better. We have someone pretty amazing.
Sorry, Joel.
Yeah.
Somebody who complimented the music, which is how we started discussing it.
True. This is Craig Rosen.
Yeah, there's no way I'm better than that guy that made that music.
I know. I don't even know why I said better.
You have a different area of expertise.
Yeah, no.
You know what? When we get them in the room, I always compliment them as the best. This is the greatest guest we've ever had. So
yeah.
Okay. I'm glad you're out with that. You're upfront about it.
Yeah. So yes, we do have Craig Rosen, the greatest guest who's ever been on our podcast this week. And we're very happy to have him. I looked on his website. Craig Rosen is an editor, writer, author, music geek, gother, golfer.
Wait, do we have Craig?
Wait, what website?
I looked on your clippings.
Oh, okay.
So this is what you wrote. You are a writer. So you put this down. Editor, writer, author, music geek, golfer, swimmer, spinning instructor, yogi. Lifelong Dodger fan, skater, lifeguard, husband, father, no particular order, in parentheses.
Boy, that sounds really geeky.
You're a lot of stuff.
That sounds really geeky read out loud. I'm embarrassed.
No, it doesn't. Actually, there's so much to latch onto.
But it's all true.
Yeah.
Right? There's nothing about what I just said that's falsehood.
It's all true. I'm busy. I try to stay busy. Yeah.
Good. We all do.
In fact, I think I have this.
Wait, remember?
And I'm off mic.
There you go. That's right.
I leaned over to get my wallet out, but I have this fortune in my wallet near my driver's license, and it says something. And I'm off mic again.
Yeah.
I'm terrible. I'm fired. I thought I was the best guest this week. And
he's a writer.
He is a writer.
Exactly. You are busy, but you are happy.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Well, we know you're busy.
It's a fortune. Yeah, it's got to be true.
I think I'm fairly happy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope so. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll go into what brought Craig happiness to this
right
point.
Right now I'm happy. I had half of a chocolate donut, so you can drink coffee.
Only 10 more waiting for you right here.
Then I won't be so happy.
The crash will happen after the podcast.
I know we're here to talk about music, but since you made that introduction, there are so many other things that I want to ask you about, like the yogi and the spin instructor stuff. And especially how you make that transition. And I know we can get to it, but I'm afraid we run out of time because we talk so much. But we're not going to forget those.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The spin instructor thing does involve music, but
your own. You get to choose your playlist.
Yeah. Little sidetrack. Since we were talking donuts, I have to say that I did work at a donut shop at Foster's Donuts in Arleta.
Shout out to Foster's.
I think it was 81. Yeah.
Did you make the donut? Did you wake up at 4 a.m. to make the donut?
No. I work in the afternoon.
High school.
I put some of the frosting on some of them. It was after I'm trying to remember the order. Okay, I got a job at Fedco, which was pretty awful.
Yes.
But then I quit Fedco because I was hired at the new Gemco. Northridge in the grocery department, a highly sought after job because you could join the union.
Oh.
But the new Gemco in Northridge wasn't as successful as they thought it would be, and they hired too many people, and the bastards laid me off before I could join the union. So then I had my rebound job was Foster's Donuts. It was rough. It was brutal.
Hey, you were making $3.35 an hour.
I was pissed off. I was a pissed off sort of punk rocker. I mean, never really did I cut my hair, but never dyed it or never had a mohawk or anything like that, but, you know.
Did you cut it for a job?
No, I cut it because I didn't want to be a hippie.
Yeah. Is that when you bought your Buzzcock shirt?
Yeah, about that time, yeah.
Did you consider yourself, you were a skater, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Skater punk, is that?
Yeah, well, I don't know if we use that term, you know, together, but... Yeah, definitely. I got into punk rock through skateboarding. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was like we used to go to this place in Reseda.
Skatercross.
Yes, Skatercross. Broke my leg there. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like one day we were listening to Carry On My Wayward Son, and like the next day it was like Devo and stuff like that. It wasn't quite that dramatic, probably, but, you know. And then, then came the Clash and the Sex Pistols and Black Flag and X and Buzzcocks and, yeah, Circle Jerks, all that stuff.
So yeah. I think we should probably now, since we're talking music, talk about how, Craig, your jump from Foster's Freeze into your education and career.
Foster's Donuts. Foster's
Donuts. Yes. Is a complete, the ice cream.
Is yes. a completely different thing, but...
Thank you for correcting.
I can go on millions of tangents, and thank you for that. I used to frequent a Foster's Freeze on Reseda Boulevard near the Record Trader. Yep.
Store.
And near the Country Club.
Yeah. Oh, Country Club. Oh, I have Country Club stories.
Oh, good.
Because we've touched on the Country Club a little bit. That was where U2 played their first show, and Oingo Boingo played many times, and... your first show?
Well, not my first show, but that was the first time that I saw REM at the Country Club opening for English Beat.
There you go. I did know
Save
that.
Save it for later.
Which brings us to that. I had no idea about that. Was that for later?
If you didn't know, there's no possible way we could have known.
Is that for real, or is that like a thing after the fact, like some pornographic Weird Al thing?
No. We both saw it on the internet, so it must be true, right?
Oh, that Dave has talked about that?
Yeah.
I read it in an interview, but then again, could the interview have been... I don't know, but I read it. They were quotes from him that I thought were quotes from him.
It does have the just hold my hand while I come, bit to a decision on this,
Yeah.
Did you not know that?
I didn't want to dig further because Holly embarrasses easily.
Look shocked about that. That I was completely on board with and picked up on.
But you didn't know that? Outed again? No.
Okay.
Nope, I did not.
Yeah. Now, can you ever listen to the song the same way again?
No.
It's a great song. I like those sort of things.
Yeah. Did you go to that show for the English Beat or for REM?
That's a good question. Probably for the English Beat, but I might have been aware of REM. I'm not sure. Actually, I posted this recently. I'm not sure which came first. I discovered REM like... There were three things, and they might have all happened around the same time. One was Wolves Lower was a flexi disc that came with Trouser Press magazine, which I subscribed to at the time. And then I think I was probably contributing to the Sundial by then, but I...
That's the CSUN.
Yeah,
Cal State Northridge is a
newspaper.
Daily newspaper. Yeah.
And I figured I wasn't... I don't think I was on staff yet, but I think I figured out that records were going there, mm-hmm. and I could go there and get them and take them. So I got, I took Chronic Town. So right around
good choice,
right around that time, all three things sort of happened, and then I became a huge fan. Yeah, REM. Yeah,
yeah, you guys have that REM. A little,
Craig. Craig literally wrote the book on REM.
Yes.
I mean, literally.
He did write a book on REM.
One book, and it's, actually, I'm not bragging. I'm just saying a fact, and it's not.
Brag.
No, well, I don't know. The book, it could have been better. I mean, it was kind of rushed, and I wish I could write it again, but,
Can you do an update? Everyone updates their...
Well, there's been one update, and I was going to say that a guy that, what's his name? Ole something. He's in Norway, mm-hmm. and he's an incredible REM Peter Buck junkie. This guy, and he posted this photo of all of his REM books, and he had both copies of mine in there. And I said, "Oh, I'm honored that you have both of mine in that picture because I know you're a real fan." And he wants me to do a new one too, and I would. It's just the publishers in London, in England, and my original contact isn't there anymore. I did propose doing a final update, but I didn't really hear back, but who knows?
Yeah. You could do post REM stuff too now. You know, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Pete Buck is pretty prolific.
Oh, I know. It would go on forever.
Yeah.
You just need some people pushing you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would do it, but it's just, you know, a question of like rights and everything, you know. I mean, they own the rights and they probably have deals for the photos and everything. So I don't know how to go about doing that. I mean, the Billboard book, they gave me the rights back. So that's why I do that thing on the website.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So the book is REM Inside Out, The Stories Behind Every Song. You can get this for $39.40 on Amazon.
Yeah, the price varies. Sometimes sometimes you see it for over like $100. And yeah, there's different editions and, you know, different weird things about it because it came out in different territories under different publishers.
This I always go to the you got a lot of 5-star reviews. I always go to the 1-star review.
Oh, thanks. Really? Thanks. That one moron that said it would have been better.
See, he still knows.
It drives me crazy. That said, it would have been better if you would have included the lyrics. Okay.
And then
it's not a lyric book. That's something different. You know, that's, they do sell lyric books. You can buy that.
Exactly.
But that's not what it is.
Maybe that was an ex-girlfriend from high school or college or something that wrote that.
I don't think so.
I remember, though, because, I mean, we didn't know any of the lyrics to REM songs. In one of my sister's magazines, her teen magazines, like Teen Beat or something, they had lyrics. And one of them had the lyrics for South Central Rain, which was just blew my mind because, like, oh my God, these are the actual lyrics. And that's how I memorized all the lyrics to that song.
What magazine was that?
It was like Teen Beat or something like that. It was weird that, I have no idea which magazine it is, but I do remember like actually seeing that and being like, inside the, you know, there's Sean Cassidy and, you know, whatever else was going on.
So hard to
picture Duran Duran and then R.E.M.
In a weird way, I could see that. They were good looking. You know, I mean, Michael Stipe was gorgeous with his hair. You know, I know there's like these fangirls and maybe fanboys that are still like wildly in love with him that I see on the internet. Yeah.
I think so. And I think even without hair, but I mean, back from, Teen Beat and 16 was another one of those magazines. They seem not heartthrobby enough.
Yeah, maybe too real. And they downplayed it and tried to ugly themselves up and everything. Yeah. But, you know, that's why we liked them. You know,
they always said that about the music. This is completely different than what you'd expect. You know, like, all right, we're not going to play guitars. We'll do the mandolin and the bassist will play keyboards and the drummer will play bass and, you know, we're going to mix it up. And then, you know, they get a number one, even though they try and ugly it up somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty amazing story.
It is. And Craig tells it well.
You mentioned the other book too. You mentioned the Billboard book. So tell us about the other book.
Oh, well, the brilliant book, the thing that I love is his number one albums for, what was it?
It's the Billboard Book of Number One Albums.
Does it look something like this?
That's actually it. Wow.
Yeah, I know. I did not even realize I have it, and I'm going to want you to sign this thing.
Oh, wow.
So we'll do that after the podcast. But yeah,
that'll be the $100 copy.
Yeah, but this. You have your numberonealbums.com. Is that based on your Billboard book?
Yeah, that's actually, it's basically the entries. I scan them in and then repost them on like an anniversary. And then hope people will click on the Google ads so I can make a penny. I just like actually hit the $100 threshold, but they had to confirm my tax information. So I haven't been paid yet.
Congratulations.
But I'm still like a few hundred dollars in the red, I'm sure. Because of that web attack, I had to hire a company to make my site. Yeah,
nice.
Be careful.
Oh.
Okay. Be careful. I can tell you about that if you
okay.
Off mic.
Yeah, I want to know.
as long as we're talking number one out, this was an insane endeavor. This was when did you did this in, what was it, 90s? Like the mid-90s?
Early 90s, and I was working at Billboard at the time, and it seemed like at that period I was writing a bunch of stories about the latest modern rock band to cross over to the mainstream.
Because it was the early 90s. I mean, what a great time for that.
You know, The Cure, The Church, and, you know, all of the bands that I liked, and I liked doing that. But I thought, you know, hey, maybe I can do something. I can learn a little bit, go back in history. And there is a guy that worked in the office that did the chart beat column, Fred Bronson, who did the Billboard Book of Number One Hits. Which is on the singles, yeah, which is very, you know, very successful. I don't think it's Billboard Books, I don't think exists anymore, but Fred did several editions of that. So I thought, hey, you know, maybe I can do like the Billboard Book of Modern Rock Hits, and there weren't that many, the chart wasn't that old. And then I thought, okay, Album Rock Hits, and that chart wasn't that old either. So I think I ended up with albums. It was, you know, wasn't too hard to pitch, and it was a lot of work.
Because you started in the
fun of information.
Yeah, started Elvis, right?
Yeah, I started at the beginning of the rock era. So I started with Elvis Presley as the first album, and then I went from there, and there's lots of weird, bizarre albums in there that I had no idea that what I was getting into, I think, when I started.
And I do believe you made a promise to listen to each and every one of those albums.
I listened to them. I might have. I mean, I did try to actually get each one. So, because a lot of them you couldn't, I don't know if it was, it might have been sort of pre-internet or very early internet, but with a lot of the albums, it was hard to find information on. Mm-hmm. So, I really needed those albums because a lot of those older albums do have liner notes on the back. So that provided me some information so I could fill out the 500-word entry.
For our younger audience, this is how we used to go about getting information.
Yeah, exactly.
Encyclopedia Britannica.
Well, that's, I mean, that was the brilliant thing were the credits. That's how we knew the players, you know, not just the band members, but, you know, the producers and the, you know, engineers and the background players and any, you know, a lot of musicians. And I'm sure that's, you know, how what led you to a lot of these interviews was to look at those credits to find these people.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes I had, you know, just friends at record companies, or they would, you know, I would ask about someone. Somehow I ended up with this one guy who was a record executive at Decca Records, who I think I interviewed about a few records, at least a few. And I don't think I knew it at the time, but I learned later. It's Billy Crystal's uncle. And it's this guy named Milt Gabler. He's probably, I don't know if he's still alive. He probably isn't, I'm guessing, because he was old back then. But at one point, I don't know what album we were discussing, but it's one of my favorite things ever. I asked him a question and he said something, "You know nothing about the music industry." It was so great. And it was sort of like a running joke with the publicist that hooked me up with him. I think Bob Bernstein, who used to work for Capital EMI, hooked me up with good old Milty.
Oh, that's awesome.
Uncle Milty.
Can we just go over Craig's credentials?
Go right ahead.
No, you got it. You were sort of reading his bio, but you were, you say you worked for Billboard, but you were the West Coast bureau chief.
Yes. Eventually I started covering radio.
Yeah. Looking at his LinkedIn profile. Yeah. But no. Okay. So you started journalism. You got interested in.
Did that start in
high school, or is it started in college? Or?
Yeah. Actually, I think it started in like sixth grade. I might have my Mrs. Mina. At Gledhill. Wow, this is going to be long. I thought it was going to be short, but no, she said something that I think at that time I wanted to be a sports announcer, and I think like Howard Cosell, my brother and I, like, you know, pretended we were Howard Cosell, and I was obsessed with Jimmy J.J. Walker on Good Times.
Good choice.
Yeah, I had the orange shirt with the iron on, but kids wore the back then.
Dynamite.
Exactly. That was it. That was the, I did the Oh Dynamite.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I love that. But that's that, you know what? I mean, that makes me happy when I can look back at that. That shows like I was down with like black culture even in sixth grade. So I wasn't like, you know, too much of a white boy, although I am, you know, white suburban boy.
growing up in the San Fernando Valley.
Exactly. But in high school, well, I grew up like, you know, reading Robert Hilburn in the LA Times and, you know, listening to Casey Kasem on the radio and, you know, KHJ, then, you know, KMET, K-Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and that sort of thing. In high school, I was on the newspaper and the swim team, so I wasn't really part of the newspaper class because it was in the morning while I was in the pool, but I did my own thing. And I reviewed an Adam and the Ants record, Kings of the Wild Frontier.
Did you give it a good review?
I did. I was an ant person. I was down with Adam, yeah. From there, I sent that out to a few people, you know.
In high school?
Yeah.
Okay,
I sent it out to Robert Hilburn, who answered, and he's like, but Halbert, how does it compare to Springsteen and Costello and stuff like that? I still have this.
Is that what he wrote back?
Yeah, I have this letter somewhere. And then this guy from Trouser Press, who was a real a-hole, Scott Isler, which is weird because...
Still remembers these names?
Yeah. I used to have this one taped on my wall. It was sort of inspiration. But the weird thing is that I would later become friends with Dave Schultz, who also worked at Trouser Press, and then Ira Robbins would later become my boss. But they worked with this guy, Scott Isler. But anyway, Scott wrote that it's probably verbatim of what it says. It's scarred in my brain. Your ant's review is filled with trite observations and colorless description. As any good English teacher will tell you, good writing stems from good thinking or something like that. That's pretty much it. So,
Where is he now?
I don't know. Yeah, DOA, I don't know. Yeah. He's probably alive. I don't know. I've never met him. He could be a perfectly nice guy, and I probably deserved it, so... Whatever.
Maybe he's working at Foster's Donut.
Yeah. But
always alive in your minds.
Yeah. But someone else that did answer, and I can't remember the name of the person, but someone from Action Now magazine answered the letter, and they said I could write for them. And Action Now was a skateboarder magazine. And when skateboarding started to fade out a little bit in the early 80s, they changed their name to Action Now and started to like include surfing and BMX and everything to make it a little broader. So
smart.
I wrote record reviews for them and I actually got paid. And that was when I was in high school. So I was kind of hooked on that. And then once I discovered I could get free records,
so it wasn't,
it was all over. Yes. And then, I started at Cal State Northridge, I went right up to the journalism office and said, hey, you know, I've already been published. I want to write for you, you know, and yeah, did that.
And what'd they say?
They said, yeah.
What did this 18-year-old kid say to you?
Yeah, it wasn't. It was the publisher. Actually, there was, it's kind of embarrassing, but I don't mind embarrassing myself. I think in the jam review, I meant to use the word cohorts. Yeah, but I spelled it cohorts. And the publisher of the Sundial said, ooh, well, that's a nice pun there. But it wasn't really intended to be. It wasn't intended to be a pun. I was just an idiot.
But you played it off.
Go with it.
Played it off.
I just probably, who knows.
Thanks.
Yeah, I probably said that. I don't know.
It's a fine line between clever and stupid.
Yeah.
And you
mentioned it. I've been walking it all my life.
All right. Oh, Holly.
You have to go to the bathroom.
We got to pay some bills and we need to go to the bathroom and take care of business every day.
I read the book.
Yeah. All right. So we'll be right back.
Hey, Pantheon listeners. Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycom order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
All right, all done with donuts?
Do I have to? You can talk now and I'll keep eating.
All right, let's get back with our conversation with Craig Rosen. So were you music critic for 4 years at Sundial. Cal State Northridge Sundial?
I eventually became the entertainment editor, and you know, so I could basically do what I want. But that's when I first wrote about REM, and I wrote about the Psychedelic Furs and the Dream Syndicate. You know, it was... Yeah, I think my first interview was with Stan Ridgway of Wall of Voodoo, but I don't, yeah, that really didn't get that much play, and I think I reviewed a Cramps concert, but eventually they got, had the full features and headlines.
How was that first interview?
And more free records.
Yeah, how was that first interview? Was Stan good?
It was okay, yeah, he was all right, and I think I did, you know, it's weird, I interviewed at one point, pretty early on, I interviewed Fishbone, but I never wrote it up because it was like close to finals and the end of the semester. So I'm sure I have it on a cassette somewhere. Yeah, but I don't know if anyone, I might have missed the moment by like 20 years, unless they do the big.
They went to my high school.
Fishbone reunion. Yeah. Angelo. Yeah. Those guys were Valley guys.
So,
yeah.
Boys.
El Camino.
Yeah.
Woohoo. Did you work? You worked at the radio station too, as well, right?
Yes.
Back in the day, because I remember listening. It was classical music during the mornings and news, but then they had the rock shift was, I believe it was from 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. The perfect graveyard shift type hours. Is that did you? Work
yeah,
that?
I was on the rock shift, and I think it was like Saturday night from like 2 to like 6 or something.
Nice.
Yeah, it was
when
great.
The party gets started.
Yeah, listening. it was a lot of fun. And speaking of donuts, there was a guy that called in, a maniac.
Oh,
this guy
between 2 Mike, and 6 a.m. That's crazy.
Yeah, he worked in a donut shop. Mike from Blinky's Donuts.
I know Blinky's.
We recently reconnected on Facebook somehow, but the thing is, he would call in. He was an incredible Iggy Pop fan, and he would call in and, you know, to request something, but he would just like, Iggy! Iggy! And the funniest thing, you know, I had never met him before, but I went and saw Iggy at the Whiskey, and all of a sudden I hear, Iggy! Iggy, and I'm like, you know, head towards that sound, and I'm like, are you Mike from Blinky's Donuts? And it was him.
And okay, that's such a trip.
That's great.
Yeah, his name is actually Mike Butler, I believe. He's He's on Facebook.
Shout out to Mike.
He reminded me of a Cramps concert that I forgot about that apparently I attended. That was at the Universal Amphitheater.
How can you forget about the Cramps?
I had seen them a lot, but I didn't remember
Universal,
that
Universal, the they must have been opening up for
someone. Yeah, no. It was a Halloween show. They were headliners.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They were that big? Because Universal was 8,000 people.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure they headlined. He posted the poster, the playbill or whatever, those things that they used to put on the telephone poles.
Yeah.
Around town.
Bills. Yeah. Post no bills.
Yeah.
Did you do that shift for a while? And
It was a couple years, I suppose.
Did you like it?
I did. I loved it. I mean, I played.
Obviously, you have to love it if you're doing the 2-6 shift.
Yeah,
to,
I played,
6 a.m.
I played like REM and Big Star and Velvet Underground and Hoodoo Gurus. And I've probably got at least one show on cassette. And I also, this is kind of funny because, Holly worked for Westwood when I also attempted to make my own radio show out of a Beastie Boys interview I did for BAM magazine. And I tried to cut it into a show. I don't know how that came off, but.
Did you pitch it?
No, I ran it on KCSN. it was an in-person, but, interview with on a cassette recorder.
How was that interview? Actually,
it was rough. Those guys were real. I mean, I love them, but they were real a-holes pretty much every time I've interviewed them.
I think they'll always admit that.
That interview was actually before License to Ill came out, and I don't think I had even really heard them. This guy, Glenn E. Friedman, who's a pretty famous punk rock, skateboard, and hip-hop photographer. I think he's got a few books out there, but he's a really great photographer. And somehow through, Action Now, Skateboarder, he got my name. And somehow somebody called me and said, hey, do you want to interview the Beastie Boys? They're in town. They're opening for Madonna. But that was before License to Ill came out.
That was 85.
I don't know the exact year, but could be. Okay. Like a Virgin tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the
84. Yeah. 84. It was 84, 85.
Yeah. Right. They played it was at the Universal Amphitheater. I didn't go to the show, but they gave me, when I did the interview, they gave me the Rock Hard single, the 12 inch, which is the one that samples AC/DC.
I'm almost positive Rock Shift was where I first heard the Beastie Boys. I don't know if it was She's On It or Rock Hard or something.
Yeah.
I remember hearing it and then calling you and saying, hey, can you play some Beastie Boys?
Beastie Boys!
Well, I went back and got Cookie Puss, of course. I think parts of that interview are in that book for License to Ill, because one of them, I can't remember who said it, but they... I asked them about, if they wanted to play instruments or, that was...
Because you didn't know.
Yeah, that was a big thing that, people... Yeah, I don't know if I knew about the hardcore thing. I might have, but, the difference between, hip-hop and punk rock, and there are a lot of similarities, but it might have been Mike D or Ed Rock. One of them said, hey, when we can afford instruments and amps like AC/DC, then we'll play instruments. And they sort of did.
And they did, yeah.
Yeah.
Came true.
Yeah.
Did you see the trailer is out for their Apple?
They have
a documentary coming out in April. Yeah. That's going to be amazing.
I haven't seen it, but I listened to the audiobook, and I loved it. And
audiobook is great, but I'm sure it's not as good as your special.
Yeah. Who knows?
You should find that.
I have it somewhere, but the funny thing about the Ultimate Revenge of the Beastie Boys is when I was at Billboard, they had a Grand Royal had a golf tournament at the little Los Feliz par three one day to just celebrate. And my friends and I, Dave Schultz and John Gwynn, who worked at Billboard, we were a threesome that entered the tournament, and we ended up tying a team of Mike D and Gary Gersh, who was then the president of Capitol Records. I don't know who the other guy was or other two. And in a putt-off, we won. So we have the first place Grand Royal Golf Tournament trophy. John Gwynn has it now. I had it for probably 20 years, but we have to rotate custody to the
And Mike D was a gracious loser, right?
Yes, he accused us in a Rolling Stone interview of cheating. So And at one point, yeah, at one point when I was at Billboard, we called him. John Gwynne wanted to call him up, and we like put him on speakerphone and or tried to get him. And we were like, "Come on, man, we'll do a rematch." You know, you called us cheaters. Let's do it. Let's do it. Never happened, but oh well. It's a good story.
Belated congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I actually played like crap that day. Those guys held me up. So.
did you tell Mike team. D? I played like crap and I still beat you.
Yeah. Teamwork.
Yeah, exactly.
Very nice. All right. So you graduate college, I guess. Did you graduate?
I did.
Congratulations.
I did eventually, yeah.
Okay. And so where do we go from there?
Well,
what
are you going to do with your life, kid? In college, I did a few interns. Well, I got a job at the Daily News.
That's the San Fernando Valley paper.
Yeah, which once known as like the Green Sheet.
The Valley News and Green Sheet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But when I worked there, it was the LA Daily News, and it was owned by Jack Kent Cook of the Fabulous Forum and Lakers and Kings fame. And Washington Redskins fame. He owned that for a while. Mm-hmm. And I was an editorial assistant. And I, you know, of course, I was, let me do a record review or whatever. So I did a few there and did a little writing there. And then I eventually got an internship at the LA Times. And I did some stuff for them. And then when I graduated, I got hired at the Daily News. First, I guess I was an intern, and then this guy named Martin Boo, who was the radio columnist, one day he really got frustrated when his precious copy was edited. And one day I saw him like walk into the managing editor's office, and he quit. So I replaced Martin Boo as the radio columnist. And then eventually the Rock Critic left. And, you know, that's what, you know, radio was just, okay, yeah, I'll do that if
Stepping
I have
stone to. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, now I sort of work radio adjacent as a full-time job, but, you know, it's something that's there, but it's not, you know, it's fine. It's all right, but.
People
you know,
do lump like, music and radio together, though.
Yeah, yeah, it's all about the music. That's what it is, basically. But while they were between Rock Critics, I got to go to San Diego to review the U2 Joshua Tree tour. I wanted to actually do an interview, but you know Bono only spoke to Hilburn.
Yeah,
and I had my like Almost Famous moment years before Almost Famous at the San Diego Sports Arena where a lot of the movie was filmed. You know, we got there, my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, I drove my Carmen Ghia out there to San Diego and we left plenty early so we'd be there in time. So we were just kind of hanging out and I see, you know, there's a big crowd like at the ramp, the load in ramp, and Adam Clayton comes out there and he's signing autographs. So, you know, ambitious young Craig goes over and tries to ask Adam some questions and he's like, "No interviews, mate." You know, it's like, F you, Adam. But I ended up doing some lame story. I interviewed the road manager backstage. And I'm sure it was
just as good.
I'm sure it was awful, but, you know, that was my access. So but who, I did review the show.
So that was a number one album, Joshua Tree. So who'd you talk to about that album?
I ended up talking to Adam later on the telephone. He was a wonderful chap.
Did you remind him that he blew you off when you tried to ask him a question?
I don't remember. I don't think so. But maybe I did. I don't know.
Probably who knows. Near the end of the interview. Yeah. That would have been a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, by the way, you're an asshole. Bye.
You were an asshole. Maybe not now.
You still are. I hold grudges. No.
I've noticed that about that. Craig. Yeah.
He likes, no, once an asshole, always an asshole. Just
and I like
kidding.
That you're calling them out
yeah,
by
yeah.
name.
Yeah.
So okay. So
I just thought of something.
go ahead.
Blurt it out.
Give you guys the exclusive. I've never talked to this, talked about this on podcast before.
Do we have exclusive
or on
music
radio?
Yeah.
To intro this.
Yeah. This is
breaking news.
This is big. At one point, when I worked at Billboard, I had to do a story about a certain record label that. The guy that ran the label was about to leave the label, and they had enjoyed incredible success with Nirvana, Aerosmith, and the Eagles. I think you know who it is. I'm not going to say his name, though.
Okay.
Way to keep it under
wraps. Yeah. But it was the worst.
Can you give me the initials of the label?
Maybe the worst or best interview experience I ever had. And it happened. There was a sequel because it didn't go well the first time. I asked, you know, I mean, they put out the way maybe record executives think the trade press works is, actually, there's a famous quote from someone, and I don't know who said it, maybe Hunter Thompson or something, that the trade press are lapdogs to the industry, which might be true. But, you know, some of us, you know, maybe had higher aspirations or whatever. This label was going through a transition. They had incredible success with those three artists that I mentioned, the Eagles, mm-hmm. with those three acts that I just mentioned. But all those artists, Kurt Cobain was dead, unfortunately. Aerosmith was headed back to Columbia. And the Eagles were, it was kind of a one-off. So, you know, okay, Mr. Famous Record Executive Legend. Okay, that's, yeah, congratulations on everything. But what about the future? You know, all your biggest artists are gone. You know, you're leaving too, which leaves a lot of questions. And he did not take well to that. The phone kind of melted. He just goes off on this rant. He's like, you were going to ask me about Kurt Cobain. How dare you? And you want to know about the Eagles? I'll tell you about the Eagles. They're a bunch of ungrateful fucking drug addicts. I'm not saying that. That guy said it. And hopefully this podcast won't be removed forever. Yeah. We'll never work in this town again. I do still have the tape on cassette. And
that's awesome. Yeah.
You said there was a follow-up, though. A follow-up.
Yeah, well, you know, after the interview, I really don't feel, I talked to the publicist again. I really don't feel good about how things went. And she said, well, either does he. Let's reschedule. Let's try it again tomorrow. So we get back on the phone and I say, hey, you know, I got to say, I don't really think anything I asked you yesterday was out of line. And he just started again.
Yeah.
it was like, yeah, it was weird. I mean, I guess, you know, some people might do business that way. And, you know, some of those guys, you know, Irving Azoff would always call me like sweetheart on the phone or whatever. And that was okay. That's all right. And this other guy, Phil Cordero, he's a little guy.
Virgin.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Phil Q. He was kind of weird. He was like, top down, chicken out, choke the chicken. It's like, what the hell? What the hell are you talking about,
Phil?
What
does that mean?
You don't want to know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Again, you know, I'm better off not knowing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think about the English.
Yeah. Save it for later.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it must have been tough, especially with Billboard, because like you kind of mentioned with Hunter, Billboard's kind of there to talk about their industry and keep everyone happy because these labels are paying all the, you know, paying the bills for the most part for ads and things and promotion. So it was kind of like a symbiotic relationship or what? I mean, if you wanted to say something critical, did you have that freedom? Or?
Yeah, we did. And yeah, no, there was a place for it. You know, it depended on the time and who was in charge. Things really changed when Timothy White became editor in chief, and he was famous from the Westwood One show, Timothy White's Rock Stars. It's funny. I wrote about him, and I think I wrote about his show before he became editor, and I think he took a liking to me, but it didn't last long. No, it didn't last too long, but it lasted for a while. But anyway, yeah, he was the one that promoted me to bureau chief after Dave DiMartino left to go to Entertainment Weekly. And shout out to Dave. He's, we're still good friends. And he was involved in hiring me at Billboard, and then he hired me at Launch, which became Yahoo Music. And he got me the REM book deal. So, yeah, he's very influential in my life. Thank you. Thank you, Dave. And thank you too, Dave.
Oh, well, thank you.
Another Dave.
Yes, thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
But you were about Timothy White, I want to say.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, there was a real, that might have been my downfall. He did not like gangster rap. He really had a strong opinion about that. And, I mean, I understood his misgivings and everything, but he really ruled with like an iron fist, and he thought we shouldn't cover that stuff at all. which I thought was ridiculous at a time when like Death Row was having number one albums. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they were, you know, the biggest label in the music business at the time. How can we just ignore them? Mm-hmm. So that's, we kind of butted heads over that. And I remember one time the news editor, this guy named Ken Terry, and I went to a meeting at Jimmy Iovine's office, and Jimmy was in there like straddling the arm of the couch. I don't know why I remember, you know, he remembers certain like weird things, but he's like, yeah, your editor has a hard on for me, you know? And it's like, it just put me in an uncomfortable position because I really didn't know what to say, you mm-hmm. know? Yeah. I mean, what do you say to that? But I didn't agree with that approach. I mean, I thought if you don't like the records, you know, write it in, you know, your music to my ears column or a commentary or something. But, you know, for God's sake, we have to like cover this label or, you know, these huge albums, you know,
it's can't credibility. Just ignore them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, it was a weird thing. So
unless he thought it was going to be a quickly passing phase of music.
Yeah. 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 Remember,
they're never rock. Music industry people are never rock.
Remember when hip hop was popular?
Yeah.
Oh, way back, yeah. Way back when.
Yeah. Yeah.
The old saying is you should never meet your idols, but I'm sure mm-hmm. you had the opportunity to meet a few of them.
Yeah, yeah, I did. And yeah, most of them are nice. I mean, most of them are all right. A funny story, when I was an intern at the Times, I did a story on when the Velvet Underground VU record came out. That was in the mid-80s sometime. I think I pretty much discovered the Velvet Underground through REM, of course. All roads lead to REM.
Here too with
yeah.
Dave.
Yeah, yeah, same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I had probably heard Walk on the Wild Side, you know, I'm sure I had before, but, you know, really didn't know, like, all the Velvet Underground stuff till they covered Pale Blue Eyes and Femme Fatale mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So anyway, they were putting that VU record out, and I pitched it as a story for the LA Times, and I was looking for people to talk to. I talked to Sterling Morrison, who was the guitar player, mm-hmm. and at that time, I think he was a professor in of English, I think in Austin or Texas somewhere, but yeah, he was a bright guy. He's since passed away, but he was a nice guy. I talked to him on the phone, and I put in the request for Lou Reed. He was on tour at the time, and I think in Australia or something. So I really didn't think it was going to happen, and I heard he was kind of an a-hole and a difficult interview. So, you know, I had the story written. I think I might have, you know, had Sterling, and I probably quoted Peter Buck talking about their influence. Of course, all roads lead to REM. Once again. Anyway, I turned the story in one night. I'm still living at my parents' house, but I had my own telephone because that's the way I rolled.
With cord?
Yeah, yeah, landline. It was brown. It was one of those modern ones. So
was it a football phone or was it a princess?
Maybe it was a princess, but it was brown. It was sleek. It was like that kind of modern 70s.
Was that the princess phone?
Was that
phone?
Called the princess? When I think of a princess phone, I think of one of those antique-y looking ones.
Oh, no.
That are pink, you know, with like handle. And
I had a big button phone.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Oh. But anyway, one night, late at night, the phone rings. Collect call from Australia from Lou Reed.
Collect.
Nice. Yeah.
You're being punked.
Yeah. No, it was real, but I was like shocked. I wasn't prepared. Oh. And I had turned the story in already. So I said, yeah, I did not accept the collect call. I said, I said, tell him, sorry. Yeah, the story's already in. But thank you.
Wow.
And that was my Lou Reed interview.
Get out.
No, it's true. It's true. Yeah.
Did you ever interview him after?
No.
Plus you were
saw him before.
I understand you're living at home, and so you couldn't afford.
I had to pay that bill.
Yeah, that would have been bill. That would have been $100 or so.
And I really wasn't prepared. Yes. I really, you know, I kind of froze. I think I kind of panicked.
You did panic.
Rejecting a call from Lou Reed.
Yeah,
a similar, well, not quite, but sort of similar for the Billboard Book of Number One albums. Johnny Cash, you know, I get him on the phone at that point. When I did interviews in my office at Billboard, I just used the speakerphone and I recorded it. And I didn't know this at the time, but, you know, okay, hi, Mr. Cash. Hi, Johnny. Am I on speakerphone? Yes. And I don't want to be on speakerphone. Yeah. So the man in black, you know, when the man in black speaks, yeah. I had to take him off speakerphone. Luckily, I got in the habit of typing when I did interviews. So I did the interview. I probably have tape of Johnny telling me to take him off speakerphone, but the interview is only me asking questions and you can't hear his answers.
Okay, that's a bummer. Wow, yeah. The funny things that Art, like, yeah. But I mean, yeah. You could have reassured him that nobody else was in the room.
Yeah, I could have, but I didn't think of that. Thanks. Can I go
20,
back and,
30, can 30 I, years too late?
Yeah, the door, yeah, it's okay, Johnny. The door is closed. No one will hear. Yeah. We're alone. Tell me anything you want. Yeah. Tell me about Save It for Later.
He was a Valley boy. He lived in the Valley for a little bit on Havenhurst.
Oh, wow.
I read Hilburn's book, and he actually published the actual address, so I went to go visit it.
Johnny Cash?
Yeah, he lived on Havenhurst, like where? By Michael Jackson's area.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Oh, so south. But,
yeah, of course, south of the boulevard.
You know who else? And I heard you guys mention him, and I thought of this today. I was listening to one of your previous episodes. Dave Stewart lived around there. Too.
Oh, okay.
I interviewed him once at his house. He was a really nice guy. I got there and he was like getting out of the bathtub. He was bathing one of his children and he was like in a bathrobe and his hair was all messed up and wet. It wasn't like a Charlie Rose or Harvey Weinstein thing.
Yeah,
it was all innocent.
Just comparing the situations.
He was a perfectly nice guy. Yeah, he was very nice.
So our discussion with Craig Rosen is far from done. But we're going to have to end this episode eventually, so let's just cut it off here, and we will return at another time. Till next week, this is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.